Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. There we go. All right. Good morning, everyone. Well, I did not expect to be up here yesterday, but I am pleased to be with you nonetheless. If you want to open your Bibles, I'm going to be picking up for Travis. We are going to be in Genesis chapter 22 this morning. If you want to open with me, we're going to be in Genesis chapter 22, the story of Abraham and Isaac. And I will tell you, if this sermon is amazing, I can take absolutely no credit for it because it's Travis's sermon. So be sure to give him thanks if it goes well. But last week, we began our summer series, Beyond VBS, where we are looking at some of the stories that we discussed and we were familiar with as kids, but looking at them kind of from a deeper adult perspective. And last week, we looked at Noah and the Ark and the Flood, and we saw the two most important aspects of the story were first, God's direct intervention and involvement, and then secondly, Noah's character brought about by God's gracious work in his life. And this morning, we turn back to Genesis, to chapter 22, to look at the story of Abraham and Isaac on their journey to Mount Moriah. So, by the time we get here, to set up a little bit of context, to chapter 22, Abraham has been following God's leadership for decades. Since Genesis chapter 12, Abraham, if I remember correctly, is now around 100 years old, a little over 100 years old, old man. And after 25 years of waiting, Abraham and his wife, Sarah, again at 100 years old, are now parents to their miracle child who God had promised that he would give them, and that son's name was Isaac. And by the time we get to chapter 22, we don't know exactly how old Isaac was, but we could assume that he's, you know, at least a child or, teenager. We don't really know exactly how old he was. We know that he's moving around with Abraham. He's having conversations with him, but the text does not tell us exactly how old he is. And the story lays itself out in five sections. So we're going to look at each section one by one before making some conclusions. So are all the verses on the screen? Like all, each one individually? All right. So what we'll do is they'll be up on the screen. We'll walk through each section verse by verse, read them together, and then make some observations. So Genesis 22. After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham. And Abraham said, here I am. And he said, take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. And then you can pause at verse 2, verses 1 and 2. So the chapter starts off with a very peculiar circumstance, does it not? God comes to Abraham and he says, I want you to sacrifice your son, right? I want you to go and I want you to sacrifice the promised son that I have given you. I want you to do what I'm telling you to do. But notice, Tucker, if you go to verse 1, it starts with a very interesting action. You know, Pastor Travis, he talks about how verbs carry action. They carry something to do. Well, notice it says, God tested Abraham. Now, some of your translations might even have the word tempted. God tempted Abraham, but this carries wrong connotations that are not present in the meaning of the word. So what does this word mean? Well, the word comes to us from the world of metallurgy and smithing. So like blacksmith, coppersmith, goldsmith. And in order to ascertain the purity of a metal object, it must be tested or tried. So when goldsmiths wanted to determine how pure a certain amount of gold was. They would put it into a smelter, and all of the impurities, they would test the gold, and all the impurities, the slag, would rise to the top. They would scrape that off, and they would be left with a purer substance. And so in this setting, the smith is not trying to cause the metal to fail, but is instead trying to make it better and stronger and purer and more refined. And in the same way, this entire story is not about God tempting Abraham to fail or to sin. It is about God refining and purifying Abraham. And I think that is so important to understand as we go to the rest of the story, because if you neglect that aspect of it, if you say, well, God was just setting Abraham up to fail, then you have a complete misunderstanding of the character of God, and you have a complete misunderstanding of the purpose of this story. And I won't lie, it's still a very difficult story, but this is a very important context to start with. The proving ground for Abraham was certainly a jolt to his system. Here, the promised son, the long-awaited son he waited decades for, they miraculously had, way past anybody, you know, when they should be able to have kids. And God says, verse 2, Tucker, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, loved him very much. Go to where I tell you, and you're going to sacrifice him. And this is certainly not what Abraham must have been imagining that God was going to ask him to do. And then the next section, verses 3 to 10, it's with me, 3 to 10. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac. And he cut the wood from the burnt for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. Then Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac, his son. And he took in his hand the fire and the knife. So they went both of them together. And Isaac said to his father Abraham, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. He said, behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? Abraham said, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. So they went, both of them, together. And when they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac, his son, and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son. Now, Tucker, if you want to jump back to verse 3, what do we see verse 3? This is very important. What did God just do? God said, you're going to do this thing. You're going to take your son. You're going to go here. You're going to sacrifice him. What does Abraham not do? Abraham does not argue with God. Abraham does not play lawyer with God about what a bad idea this is. He doesn't even remind God of his promises, like happens elsewhere, like with Moses, right? God's about to wipe out the people of Israel in the wilderness, and Moses says, God, please remember your promise, and he relents. He doesn't even do that. What we do have in verse 3 is Abraham doing everything that he needs to do what God told him to do, right? If you look, he prepares for a multi-day journey. He saddles up the animals. He takes supplies. He gathers servants, and he prepares to go on a journey of how long he'll be gone, he doesn't know. Then he travels 3 days from his home in southern Israel, Beersheba, until he finally comes to the place that God shows him, which is Mount Moriah. And when they arrive, Abraham and Isaac leave the two servants with the animals, and they take everything else that they need for the sacrifice. They take the wood, they take the fire, and they take the knife. But right before they leave, notice what Abraham says to the servants. He says, which verse is it? Just so it can be put up on the screen. Verse 5, Tucker. He says, stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you. Do you notice something? I see Mark back there. He's like, yeah, I see it. Do you notice something? Abraham has a certain thought process going on here. Notice he does not say, we're going to go and then I'm going to come back to you, right? The implication here is you're going to stay here. Me and Isaac are going to come over here and worship, and then we are going to come back to you. Right? So Abraham's thought process, either he's playing it off really cool and lying to himself and be like, oh my gosh, my son's about to die. Or maybe more accurately, as Hebrews chapter 11, the Hall of Faith tells us, Abraham believed that even if Isaac were to be sacrificed, he believed that God could raise him from the dead. Right? That's what Hebrews 11 tells us. So Abraham, right now in this moment, believes that what is going on here is that both of them are going to come back. God is going to be faithful to him no matter what, and his job is just to obey. So as they ascend the hill, Isaac is keen that they have everything but one thing, and perhaps that's the most important thing. He's like, where's the sacrifice? Where's the lamb? We're going up here to worship. We're going up here to sacrifice. Where is it? And notice Abraham's response, verse 8. He says, God will provide. God will provide a lamb for a burnt offering, my son. And this, again, points back to the idea that Abraham fully intends on both of them coming back. Because I'm not going to lie, I have heard from some different, like, online influencers and some different places on the internet, which we know how the internet is. But I've heard some different interpretations of this story before where they read these things and they go, man, Abraham was just a careless, apathetic psychopath going and going to kill his son with no regard for his life. And I think if you read the text and you just look at the text itself, I don't think that option is available to us. I don't think Abraham was this careless father going and just recklessly doing whatever God told him to do. I think he had full faith that God was going to purify him, that God was going to work on his heart and his mind to do whatever he would have him to do. God had not yet let Abraham down in his life. His entire life, God has been faithful to him, and Abraham still in his mind is going, God is still going to be faithful right now, even though he doesn't understand it. And with this answer given to Isaac, both go up the hill, and when they arrive at the top, an altar is built and wood's placed on the altar. And even though Abraham clearly has faith in God, you know that at the same time, he binds up his son like a sacrifice, right? He binds him up. He begins laying up the wood. He prepares the altar. And you can almost just feel that he's probably saying to himself, like, what is going on? Like, what is happening? Like, what is God doing? What is going to happen in this circumstance? And Isaac was probably wondering the same. Right? We don't know how old he was, but I can very much imagine just his thoughts and the look on his face as Abraham takes the knife and he raises it up, and then something miraculous happens. Verse 11 to 14. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here I am. He said, do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him, for now I know you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the name of that place, the Lord will provide. As it is said, to this day, on the mount of the Lord, it shall be provided. So in this moment of sacrifice, God stops Abraham. The angel of the Lord calls out, don't lay your hands on the boy. You fear God. I see your level of dedication and obedience to offer your son as a sacrifice. And this again, points to this idea of like Abraham is trusting God all the way to the point of the final act. He's prepared to go through. The angel stops him, and then Abraham sees a ram caught, right? The angel exclaims, don't do this, and then he sees the provision. He sees the ram behind him, which clearly we could assume was not there when they're going up the hill, or Abraham would have seen him and he would have known, like, oh, there's a sacrifice available, but Abraham doesn't see it up to this point. God miraculously provides this ram in the exact moment that Abraham needed it as a substitute. And Abraham takes the ram, uses it as a sacrifice, as an offering to the Lord. And in that moment, Abraham names the place, Mount Moriah, a special name. He says, "The Lord will provide," which in Hebrew is Jehovah Jireh. God is my provider. And in every way, God provided. He provided Abraham safe passage to Moriah. He provided exact knowledge of the exact location he wanted Abraham to sacrifice in. He provided for Abraham what he could not provide for himself, which was an acceptable sacrifice, because he didn't have a lamb or a ram or a goat or a bull or even a bird. And then lastly, God provided for Isaac what he could not provide for himself. So not only did God provide for Abraham a sacrifice, but he provides for Isaac the substitute. In every way, God provides for them. And we see this play out throughout the rest of Scripture. God continues to be a God who provides for his people. Next section, verse 15 to 18. The angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, "By myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven, as the sand that is on the seashore, and your offspring shall possess the gate of his enemies. And in your offspring shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice." Now, once the sacrifice has been made, God calls Abraham again, this time with a promise. God promises four things to Abraham. He says, "I'm going to bless you. I'm going to multiply your offspring," to the point where he says, "They're going to be like the stars in the sky or the sand on the seashore. Your offspring will possess the gates of your enemy. They will be victorious. And in your offspring, all of the nations of the entire world will be blessed." This is an incredible promise that he gives to Abraham, a quadruple blessing. God promises to do above and beyond anything that Abraham could have expected or imagined. But notice this last little phrase right here, verse 18. It's like a clause for everything he just said. He gives all this blessing, and he says, "Because you have obeyed my voice." Faith and obedience are what laid the groundwork for this blessing to occur. So, in some sense, if Abraham would have stayed home and not listened to God and not gone on this journey of obedience, none of these blessings would have been possible for him. So, in some sense, faith and obedience to God does, in fact, open the possibility for God to bless us and to use us in ways that would not happen otherwise. And I'm sure if Travis was here, he probably would comment on this, because it's what comes to my mind. This is not prosperity gospel, okay? This isn't, "I'm going to be good for God, and God's going to abundantly bless me and provide for it." Like, that is not what we're talking about. But we can very clearly see here that there is blessing in obedience. Right? Even if it's not the quadruple blessing of all these things are going to happen with your people and your offspring, even if it is just the blessing of testing, right? Because remember that word, it's about purifying. It's about transformation. It's about renewal. Like, at the very least, our obedience brings that about as a blessing in our life. And he adds the comment here, "Does this mean if we are faithful and obedient to God, he's going to speak from heaven and tell us to do the same things today?" No, it does not. He put like big quotations around this. No, it does not. This is how God chose to use and bless Abraham, not us. Okay? So we can pull the principle of blessing through obedience, but not this exact promise and blessing through obedience, because this is for Abraham. how God chooses to bless us will inevitably be different. Yet, the record of the Bible is emphatic. Faithfulness and obedience pave the way for God's blessing upon our lives. And the story concludes rather abruptly in verse 19, which simply states that the party returned home to Beersheba. Now, let's be honest. The story tells us a lot. There's a lot going on in this story. But the story leaves us with a lot of questions as well. So here's a couple that he threw out. What did Isaac think about this? Like, I'm trying to imagine, like, on the journey there, like, Isaac is just following his dad. And then the sacrifice happens, and Isaac's probably like, okay, what's going on? And then, you know, his dad goes to raise up the knife on him, and then the angel miraculously provides. But, like, what were the conversations like on the three-day journey home? I've had some awkward car rides before. You know, you're riding for, like, an hour, and you're like, please just let me get home. Like, please just let... There ain't no getting away. You're on those donkeys side by side. You're riding for 3 days. Like, I can't even imagine what that was like, and we'll never find out because the text doesn't tell us. But another question might be, how could Abraham do that, right? Like, of course, we view Abraham as a righteous man, and he listened to God, but, like, there's also the natural part of us that just goes, like, you know, my daughter, Eliana, right? My only child. Like, could I do that? And the answer that my answer is I don't know. Like, the pious Christ-like, you know, up and Adam part of me goes like, absolutely, I would do anything for God. But, like, I'm not in Abraham's shoes. But we could ask, like, how could Abraham do that? What was Abraham's conversations with his servants, right? Because it's not just Isaac involved, but, like, it's his whole household, right? Like, I mean, imagine going home to Sarah, and, like, he's having to explain to his servants, explain to his wife, like, oh, yeah, I was going to sacrifice our son, but then God provided. And here we realize an important fact of biblical interpretation, and that is sometimes we have to be okay with the reality that God has allowed what we need for faith in him and life in him to be in the Bible. And if it is not there, need it. That's a hard biblical interpretation fact, because sometimes we have these questions that we want answered, but sometimes if the question is not answered, we can't assume it. We can't jump to conclusions and just say, like, oh, well, this is what they said, and this is what they thought, and this is why this happened, when the text does not answer it. And there's nothing wrong with asking those questions, but at some point we just have to realize that this side of heaven, and maybe perhaps ever, we might never have answers to some questions, but what we do have in the scriptures is everything that we need to know for life and faith in God. I'm not going to leave you on that cliffhanger there, right? Because that just seems like a cop-out. Here's our application. The important question is, what in the world do we gain from this passage? Because you'll probably say to me, Logan, I don't know about you. I don't plan to sacrifice my child this week. So where does this tie in with my life? Well, two immediate things. First, God provides. That is by far the simplest thing from the passage. God provides. God provides for Abraham and Isaac. He provides the blessing upon Abraham, his sons, his future descendants. God provides for everything. And second, Abraham's faithfulness. So we have God's provision and Abraham's faithfulness. Those are the two cornerstones of this story. Abraham had clear, unadulterated faithfulness to God. Abraham was so faithful, he was willing to give up the thing that was most dear to him in order to be faithful to God. And so I think the follow-up question to that is, are we willing to give up or to do whatever is necessary to be obedient to God? Right? I think that's a safe principle for us to pull from this. It's like, sure, we're not imitating Abraham in this exact thing, but we have to look at it and say, are we willing to do anything? But here's what this passage is also doing. And there's no way Abraham and Isaac and Moses, mind you, who historically we believe wrote the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, there's no way that they would have realized this, because it would not take place for another millennia. But this passage is an amazing, incredible foreshadowing of a future event that would change history. I'm not going to lie, y'all. I had not thought about this in this exact way until I was reading over these notes, and I had like a little mind blow yesterday when I was reading over this. I was like, God is so faithful. Hundreds of years after this story, King David's son, Solomon, builds the temple of the Lord in Jerusalem. And on that is on the very same hill that Isaac was saved. The temple was built on Mount Moriah. And the sacrifices that were made there of animals would serve as a substitution for the sins of the people for hundreds of years. And yet, year after year, as Hebrews 10 tells us, people still had to come back to offer sacrifice after sacrifice because the blood of bulls and goats cannot take away the sins of people. Until one day, another son would be on a hill just outside that city. And Abraham would have been able to see that hill from Moriah, from the same place where the temple now stood, where Isaac was going to be sacrificed, where the temple was then placed as a sacrifice for the people, where Jesus would then, just across the way, in sight of that very temple, an incredible thing would happen. It's just, something different happened on that day. See, in our story, a father spared a son, right? The son was spared in our story. But in the first century, on the hill called Golgotha, the place of the skull, a son was not spared. There was a son who took the punishment, the shame, the beating. He took the death that we should have taken, and he died in our place as our substitute. He was my substitute. He was your substitute. And the pain and the suffering and the punishment that we should have bore, he took for us. He was bruised for our transgressions, for our iniquities. He offered himself once for all that we might have salvation and cleansing and covering and purifying for a new life and a changed heart and a renewed and right spirit within us. So when we read the story of Abraham and Isaac on Mount Moriah, we see the foreshadowing of the events at Calvary when God did not spare his son. When Jesus was offered up for our sins that we might experience salvation and redemption in him, that we might become heirs of his kingdom in heaven. And might I add, not only, and this is also a difference between the story of Abraham and Isaac and Jesus, I think we can so often view it as like, you know, Isaac just went along with what his dad told him to do. Right? And so we can almost view Jesus in the same way, as like Jesus was just like, okay, dad, I'll do whatever you want me to do. But if you remember from our time together in the Trinity months back, we know that Jesus and the Father and the Spirit are eternally in communion with one another. There was no divine council in the heavens where the Father came to Jesus, he's like, hey, I got a plan, and you're just going to have to go along with it, right? And you got no say in this. No. Jesus was completely and willingly participating in this plan of sacrifice. Jesus willingly gave himself as the Son for you and me. And now we conclude by asking ourselves again the question, are we willing to be obedient? Are we willing to be obedient? And we cannot pass up the opportunity to also be thankful for the time that God did not spare his son, right? In the same way that Abraham was thankful that Isaac was spared, we get to be thankful that Jesus was not spared for our sake. So I challenge us this week. Everybody's lives looks different. My life looks different from yours. But like my challenge this week as I go home and as I be with my family and I be with my wife and my daughter and my extended family and come here to be with y'all and my friends, I can't help but think about the different parts of my life that are not surrendered, right? We just talked about this in Sunday school. We're in Romans 6, and it was talking about we're either slaves to sin or we're slaves to Christ. But I can't help think of these areas in my life where I know that God has been so faithful and so giving and so loving and so gracious and so forgiving and has provided for me and delivered me out of things that I thought would hold me captive for the rest of my life. But then I also look at other things that I deal with every single day, with my anger and with my impatience and with just these different things that I struggle with. And so my challenge is, if Abraham was willing to do whatever it took to listen to God, and Jesus was willing to do whatever it took to be obedient and to sacrifice himself for us, my challenge is to ask myself for those different areas of my life, why am I unwilling to do that? Why am I unwilling to participate in those things the way that they did, the way Abraham did, the way that Jesus did? And so my prayer for myself and for all of us this week is that we would seriously challenge ourselves. We would go home and we'd think about those things and say, like, am I not being obedient somewhere? Is there an area of my life that I am not surrendered to be more like Jesus? And that could be what we would call commission or omission. Sin of commission means we're doing something wrong, right? I lied to someone. I just committed something, right? But there's also sin of omission. It's not doing what's right, right? It's not standing up for the right thing to do. And so whether it's commission or omission, whether it's physical or mental or spiritual, I challenge all of us this week, think about what those things are in your life. Pray and ask for God's help in those things, and let us be willing to follow him in obedience.
Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.